Chapter 15. The reptilian bird creature ambled toward me with impressive speed, but it was no match for my speed slug enhanced body. Shit! I cursed as I leapt out of the way, and after I scanned the surrounding land, I took off toward a more elevated and rocky terrain in order to buy some time while I thought of a plan. I could have very easily asked Sarah to take us away from the monster and teleport us back to the safety of the Enclave, but the creature's jagged fangs were enough to convince me it was better off dead. The last thing my conscience needed was an unnecessary civilian death because I chose to run, rather than to defeat this deadly monster. The reptilian creature tried to keep pace with me, but soon it became a blur. It was difficult to create a plan without knowing how the monster was classified, but judging by its height and the fact it wasn't sending any magical attacks my way, I could estimate it was a grade C at most. My Kalgori blades were likely enough to tear this monster open, but I needed something swifter to really do some quick damage. It was fast, but I could be faster, and I needed a head start in order to get close enough to slice it limb from reptilian limb. I scanned the terrain until I spotted a perfect spot, and then I rushed over, perched on top of a particularly large boulder, and waited for the monster to catch up to me. My heart whirled so quickly in my chest that I almost grew worried, but I centered myself on this task. I was going to be just fine once this creature met its end. Finally, I heard the crunching and shifting of burnt grass, and a silver shimmer appeared in the distance. I strengthened my stance, and a smile suddenly crept onto my face. I was ready to take this monster down. I had beaten monsters and goddesses much more powerful than this. The poor bastard wouldn't even know what hit him. The monster slithered through the tall grasses as if it had heard my inner musings, and once it was in the prime position, I leapt off the boulder and tackled the unsuspecting creature. Adrenaline surged through me, and the monster hissed and snarled as it tried to snap its long pointed beak, but I had it in such a tight lock that it wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. The monster and I rolled around in the dirt, but I strengthened my hold. "You can't best me that easily," I growled at it, and then I allowed my blades to push through the monster's scaled hide. The creature bucked and writhed so badly, I almost grazed myself in the face with my blade, but I managed to steady my hold around the creature before that could happen. The effort took a moment, but my summon's weapons were too sharp for the reptilian monster, and it let out a broken snarl as I shoved them through its body. Gooey brown blood sprayed me right in the face, and then, moments later, the creature exploded into dust. I cringed as the materials congealed on my face, and after I took a moment to catch my breath, I wiped the liquid away. Why was there always so much goo involved in killing monsters?
"Griff, are you all right?"
Sarah demanded as she flew over to my side. The Arkan's features betrayed her concern, and she glared down at the monster remains surrounding me. "I'm perfectly fine," I insisted as I retracted the Kalgori's blades. Then, I laid there on my back and stared up at the scarlet sky. That thing was fucking fast.
"So were you."
My dark-winged lover shook her head as her yellow eyes flashed with lingering alarm.
"One moment you were beside me, and the next you were nothing but a blur. I wanted to catch up to you, but I didn't want to alert the monster to your whereabouts before you could set up your trap."
"I appreciate you lingering behind," I expressed. "The plan worked out perfectly, especially after I just threw it together."
"You're the Beastmaker, and the best summoner humans have to offer,"
Sarah complimented me like she wasn't even surprised. And then she extended her hand out to me.
"Now, we should probably get going before another beast appears. If we linger around this field for too long, we're likely to find a whole herd of mangy beasts, and we'll be stuck here all day."
"Good point," I allowed, and I gratefully accepted her support. The Arkan helped me to my feet, and once the lightheadedness faded away, I flicked off any monster remains that still clung to me, and I recalled my bullet bass armor and my speed slug's abilities. When they faded away, I was left with my battle clothes, and I was pleased to see that they weren't ruined any further than they'd been in the Shadowscape. I took a moment to run my hands through my hair and straighten myself out before I reclaimed Sarah's hand. Yarkin smiled as I threaded my fingers through hers, and she squeezed my hand tightly.
"I love you, Griff,"
she whispered.
"Always and forever."
"I love you too, Sarah," I said. "Now, let's get the fuck out of here and get back to Varley. I'm sure everyone is ready for us to finally be home. And hey, every second with you brings me joy." Sarah flashed me a loving smile, and then she turned and waved her hand in the air. A shimmer appeared in front of us again, and it twisted and expanded until it took the shape of a portal. The Darkwing and Arkin and I shared one last look before we stepped through it and teleported into Varley. When I opened my eyes again, Sarah and I were standing in the driveway of my mansion, and relief flooded through my entire body. After everything the Arkins and I had been through in the Shadowscape, it was nice to finally be home, and I was thrilled by the idea of seeing my family again. To my relief, nothing about the mansion seemed amiss. The walls were just as regal and wide as usual, and the only indication that an apocalypse had struck was the dead and darkened lawn. Everything else was the same, and I let out a sigh. I'd half expected burnt or caved-in walls, smashed windows, or worse. Before I could take a step forward, the front door flew open, and Nia raced out into the drive. Sarah moved out of the way just in time to avoid the elementalist's advances, and her lips curled up in an amused smile as my wife slammed into me with an impressive force.
"Griff!"
Nia exclaimed in a high-pitched squeal.
"I thank the Maker you're actually back! I've been so worried about you!"
The ashen-haired mage wrapped her arms around my neck and pressed her long, lithe body against mine. We fit together like puzzle pieces, and I finally felt whole again now that I was reunited with my wife. "Oh, Nia," I whispered into her pale, silvery hair. "I've missed you so much."
"I've missed you too,"
she murmured as she rested her cheek against my chest.
"I swear, Farm Boy, every time you leave, I tell myself it's going to be easier, and yet I still can't get used to it."
"I understand the feeling," I assured her. "Trust me, Nia, it's no easier to leave." We stood there for a moment, and we were wrapped in one another so tightly, it almost felt as if we'd melted into a single person, until my wife finally pulled away from my embrace.
"We need to head inside,"
Nia declared, and her brilliant blue eyes glanced up at the sky.
"It isn't safe out here, especially with the quality of air. We've already been out here longer than we're supposed to be."
"You're probably right," I agreed with her, and then I looked over at Sarah. "Sarah, I'm going to recall you, if that's all right, at least for right now."
"I don't mind,"
Sarah insisted, and she shot a small smile over to Nia.
"I'll be here when you need me, Griff."
I took a breath, and the dark-winged goddess returned to her marks. Once my back stopped tingling, I squeezed Nia's hand, and the elementalist led me up the drive at a hastened pace.
"I'm surprised by Sarah's willingness to cooperate,"
Nia noted when we walked through the front door and stepped into the foyer.
"Doesn't she usually make a big deal about following orders?"
"That was the old Sarah," I reminded her as I slipped my dirty boots off and cast them to the side. "The new Sarah is a lot more willing to follow directions."
"I'm sure your child in her womb helped usher that change,"
Nia remarked, and I wasn't sure how to interpret her tone, so I decided a shift in subject would be best. "Nia, I really hate to ask this question, but how long has it been since we left?"
2 weeks,
the ashen-haired mage revealed in a solemn tone. "This all happened in 2 weeks?" I breathed, and relief and horror warred inside my chest. The damage, the shriveled wildlife, the tentacles on the moon getting closer. How is that possible?
"It began the day you left,"
the elementalist sighed, and then she crossed over to the spiral staircase and took a seat on the first step.
"It's only gotten worse. We've been doing our best to keep the monsters away, but it hasn't been as successful as we'd like it to be."
Have the attacks continued? I asked as I stepped over to the railing. Nia's lips drew into a thin line, and she let out another sigh.
Unfortunately, there's only been one day in the past 2 weeks where there wasn't an attack outside the Enclave. Our forces are almost completely exhausted, and everyone is running on fumes. And on that note, the fumes aren't helping anyone either. The air has become so toxic everyone has to wear masks, if they're planning on being outside longer than 5 minutes. Of course, the order only extends to military personnel. Civilians have been given a mandate to remain inside unless otherwise escorted by higher authorities.
Something tells me that hasn't been going too positively. I winced.
It wasn't at first, but people have recognized the risk.
Nia contradicted me.
We haven't had as many incidents as you would think, but it doesn't mean we don't get the occasional citizen who doesn't understand how breathing in the air can hurt them.
There's comfort in that, at least, I allowed. Toxicity in the air was a major hazard for all involved, and I could only imagine how difficult things were for the civilians out in the wilds who didn't have access to facial coverings. There were so many men, women, and children out there without military forces to properly look after them. And even though a vast majority of them had chosen that life, others simply didn't have the financial stability to allow them the comfort of an enclave. I could only hope Headmaster Sleet and the Grand Mage had taken my request seriously and provided some kind of aid and protection to the civilians out in the wilds. My thoughts were interrupted by footsteps against the white marble floor, and I looked up to see another familiar and excited face enter the room.
Oh, Griff, you're back!
Kristen crossed over and swept me into a surprisingly strong hug. I wasn't used to this kind of affection from my aunt, but it was certainly a welcome change of pace from our past stoic relationship. Hi, Kristen, I greeted the guardian. I'm happy to see you.
Unfortunately, the circumstances have not improved since the last time we shared this exchange,
my aunt sighed.
If you've returned, that means either your mission was successful, or you weren't able to recover anything after all. Judging by the look on your face, I'd assume it's the former.
We found something, I confirmed. It's definitely not the ideal situation, but it brings us more answers than we had before.
I don't like the sound of that, Kristen winced. I'm sure you'll want to tell everyone the news at once, so I won't ask you to reveal everything right now.
Thank you, I replied, and then I glanced behind the guardian. Not to take away from the discussion, but where is everyone else? I'm used to getting tackled by everyone the moment I step foot into the mansion.
They should all be upstairs, my aunt answered,
and her hazel eyes glanced up at the staircase.
Nia and Syra just returned from a mission with the Grand Mage just this morning, and I know Syra was quite exhausted upon arrival.
A mission? I whipped my head around to stare at Nia. You were out on a mission?
It's not that big of a deal, Griff,
my wife shrugged at me. It is when I'm just now finding out you're here instead of resting. I raised an eyebrow at her. Have you gotten any sleep since you returned?
No,
Nia admitted, and a blush spread across her cheeks.
I was too busy for sleep.
Nia, you have to take better care of yourself, I urged the multi-elementalist. What was so important you had to stay up for it?
Your return,
my wife replied quietly.
I was waiting for you to come home.
Nia, I murmured, and my heart melted at the sentiment. Nia Kinnifick had the kindest heart of anyone I knew, and it was times like this that made me eternally grateful to have her as my wife.
I didn't know if today would be the day,
Nia continued.
But I sat here every morning for the past 2 weeks just in case.
That means the world to me, my love. I smiled at her. I appreciate the thought, but now that I'm home, I'd really like for you to try and get some rest.
You just got back,
Nia protested, but my mouth drew into a thin line. And I'm not planning on going anywhere else, I interjected. You just returned from a mission. Please, go get some sleep. It sounds like you deserve it.
I don't know if I can commit to actual sleep,
the ashen-haired mage sighed.
I should go up and check on the twins.
I can do it in a bit. I shook my head. Please, Nia, head upstairs and at least take a quick nap. I can handle things from here.
Fine,
Nia finally agreed.
But this conversation isn't over, Mr. Porter.
Of course not, Lady Kinefic, I replied, and I waggled my eyebrows in an attempt to make Nia laugh. It worked, and the elementalist broke into giggles. Once the sound subsided, she composed herself and kissed my cheek.
I love you, Griff,
she whispered, and then she headed up the stairs without another word. When my wife was out of my sight, I turned to my aunt. How have they been? I asked her softly. My family, I mean. Are they all right?
I promised you I'd keep them safe,
Kristen assured me.
I've kept that promise. Your family has fared just fine in your absence, though I know everyone is exhausted. It's been a long 2 weeks, Griff. There's no way around that fact.
I gathered that from the way the Enclave looked from the outside, I replied as I leaned against the railing of the staircase. I can't believe how much everything has keeled over since I left.
It's truly awful,
my aunt sighed, and then an alarmed expression overtook her face.
Wait, why were you outside the Enclave?
I wanted to get a better idea.
Griff, you cannot step foot outside the walls of Arlay,
the Guardian warned me in an intense tone.
I know you've been absent, so there's no way you could have known. But this entire city has been placed on lockdown. No one is allowed to leave unless they're on a military airship.
Wow, I breathed. That's a serious order.
The Grand Mage made the decision shortly after you left,
Kristen explained in a much more relaxed voice.
With the frequency of the attacks, not to mention the hazardous atmosphere, it's best for everyone to remain inside the Enclave.
How are the neighboring villages faring? I decided to ask her. Had they been granted protection?
Yes,
my aunt confirmed as she crossed her arms against her chest.
A team was put together to guard the villagers. There's a rotation of them so the mages don't risk too much exposure. The Grand Mage has everyone wearing gas masks normally reserved for the Shadowscape.
Maker, I cursed. Things aren't looking good. When I got here, I almost thought I was still in the Shadowscape.
That's certainly how it feels,
Kristen sighed as she rubbed her temples in circles. It was then I noticed just how tired the Guardian really was. My aunt was really beautiful, but her skin had taken on a wan coloring that made me worried. The whites of her hazel eyes were bloodshot, and they were underscored by a soft violet shade reserved for sleepless nights and black eyes. Even her face and body looked thinner. All of this stress had caused her to lose weight. Kristen, I appreciate all you've done. I reached out and placed a hand on my aunt's arm. I wish I could just show you how grateful I am. But I don't think there's a way to do so. That being said, I've returned now, and I want you to do the same thing I requested of Nia and take a moment to relax.
Griff, you can't come back and dole out nap orders,
Kristen chuckled. It looks like someone needs to, I retorted. Both of you look exhausted. The Guardian shook her head back and forth.
There's no time.
I'm not asking you to take a sabbatical, I interjected. I'm suggesting you take a long soak in the hot springs, or at least take a nap. I can see just how hard you've been pushing yourself, and I want you to take a second to refresh yourself before you crash and burn. Please, Kristen. I know it seems like a ridiculous request, but I'm worried about you. Please indulge me just this once. My aunt opened her mouth to protest, but then her face softened considerably.
Sometimes I swear I'm in the same room as Relad. You have so much of your father in you. Especially his stubbornness.
It's one of my finer traits. I grinned at her. And the Guardian was finally forced to laugh.
I appreciate how much you care,
she admitted.
Sometimes it's hard for me to step back. I've never been great at taking time for myself.
I know, I said. I have trouble doing the same. But if I've learned anything over the past few years, it's the importance of a long soak and a good nap. So, For my sake and yours, head upstairs. I can handle it from here.
Thanks.
The guardian smiled at me, and then she stepped forward to wrap me in another hug. This one was shorter than the first, but the amount of love was still the same. We finally broke apart and then made our way up the spiral staircase. Kristen used the railing to brace herself, and every step seemed labored. If I hadn't intervened, my aunt would have run herself into the ground trying to protect my family. I admired the guardian's commitment to her vows, but I needed to stress the importance of self-care if this relationship was going to continue. We parted ways when I stopped at the third floor and watched her ascend to the fourth floor, before I walked down the hall and over to the nursery. I took a moment and prepared myself for the onslaught of commotion and questions. I was so overwhelmingly excited to be reunited with my family, but I was nervous to see the state of them all. If Kristen and Nia were any indications, they were likely all exhausted and stressed out, and it broke my heart to think of them that way. However, when I opened the nursery door, I was met with nothing but warmth and love. My reunion with the rest of my family was full of heartfelt embraces and kisses, and I even spotted some tears in the eyes of my women, which was almost enough to send me over the edge myself, but I managed to remain strong. I held each of my wives and girlfriends close and soothed their weary minds, and once we'd gotten past all of the emotions, they caught me up on all that had been happening. Syra and Nia had been going on a few missions with the Grand Mage, while Arwen and Ashla were working with the research team to continue to pore over the Academy's history books. Aaron and Vala had mostly stayed home to watch over the children, and Freya divided her time between childcare and assisting my aunt and Layla. The auburn-haired summoner and Kristen had spent a vast amount of time looking over the people in the lower parts of Arlay, known as the slums. It had been difficult for Layla, whose entire family resided in the derelict part of the city, but she'd volunteered to go nonetheless. The Bethels had all but disowned their daughter when she displayed an aptitude for magic and became a student of the academy. The petite summoner's family consisted of gamblers and drunks, and they'd expected Layla to suffer the same fate.
"I know they're terrible, but I needed to know they were safe,"
Layla admitted as she rocked Daphne in her arms.
"I didn't speak with them long. My parents tried to apologize, but I could tell it was only because we're in the middle of an apocalypse."
"I'm sure that wasn't easy to deal with," I said. "What did you end up saying to them?"
"I accepted their apology, but assured them there was no relationship between us going forward,"
the auburn-haired mage replied simply.
"I've let go of my anger toward them, but they aren't my family anymore, and I've accepted that. Now it's their turn to reflect on how badly they treated me."
"That was very big of you, Layla," I smiled at her. "I'm proud of you for handling it so professionally. I don't know if I could have done it."
"It wasn't without difficulty, Griffey,"
Layla insisted.
"But it's all done and over with, and I have higher priorities, namely taking care of the civilians and our family." "What's the plan now that you're back?"
Ashla wondered.
"I've already arranged for the headmaster, the Grand Mage, and the other members of the team to join us here tomorrow,"
Arwen announced before I could speak.
"There's a lot to talk about, and I'm sure Griff is exhausted from his journey. I think we could all do with a bit of quietness before we plunge back into the chaos."
"I agree,"
Layla chimed in. And so we did just that. The rest of the day was spent eating, playing with the babies, and other low-impact things around the house. There was much to do tomorrow, but for now, we focused on spending time with one another. I dreaded my return to reality, but as I sat around with my loved ones once more, I let all thoughts of demons, shadows, and monsters fade away. The next day, another meeting was arranged in our home, just like the one we'd held before my departure, but it was vastly different in tone compared to the last gathering. Headmaster Sleet, Grand Mage Kennefic, and my male friends all sported the same violet under-eyed circles that Kristen and a couple of my other women had, as well as generally pale, weakened visages. It pained me to see my team so beaten down, but I can only imagine what they'd endured in the 2 weeks I'd been gone.
"So, Griff, you have the floor,"
Galahar prompted me once we were all seated and ready, and then he waved me forward for further emphasis.
What did you and the Arkans recover in the Shadowscape?
He was wasting no time in getting to the point. Not that I could blame him. There was much to attend to, and I didn't want to keep my team longer than necessary when there was an entire enclave to protect. So I reached into the travel bag I'd brought with me, carefully removed the contents of it, and placed them on the table in front of me.
Please tell me that's exactly what we're looking for,
Varlith urged me as he and my teammates studied the book with looks of awe.
It is, I confirmed, and I opened the black leather-bound book and held it open to the first page. This book is a history of the realms. We found it in a hidden chamber in the dungeon of Karth's former castle.
Hidden chamber in a dungeon?
Gawain repeated back to me as his emerald eyes flashed.
Are we certain that this thing isn't cursed?
It definitely looks like it is,
Syra chimed in, and her nose scrunched up in disgust.
How can you tell it's a history book, Griff? All I see are more of those hieroglyphics from the other book you stole from the castle.
I can't really explain how I was able to make it happen, but I managed to use my magic in a way that allowed me to translate the book. I shrugged. It looks like glyphs to the rest of you, but to me, it reads as Mistral, plain as day.
I feel like none of us should be surprised our friend Griff has managed to unlock yet another magical ability.
Almasi chuckled as he crossed his arms behind his head and leaned back in his leather chair.
You know, at this point, it's almost easier to just ask what you can't do rather than what you can.
Our Griffy is a badass,
Layla agreed with a proud gleam in her round hazel eyes.
Thanks, Bethel, I chuckled.
So, since the rest of us aren't fluent in ancient glyphs, could you explain what exactly the book talks about?
Syra suggested.
I was just getting around to that, I said. It's kind of a long story, but I'll try to explain it quickly.
So I did just that, and explained every detail of our mission to the Shadowscape. I explained the Athanid attack, and how the ruined library had led us down to the dungeon. I noticed a few of my women make faces when I described the Athanids, and each let out sighs of relief when I explained how we'd gotten rid of them, when I described the dark skeleton-ridden dungeon in detail.
That sounds dreadful,
Galahar remarked as he shook his head.
How tragic for all who ended up in such a situation.
There were so many skeletons down there, I lamented as the mental images danced through my mind. I can't even imagine how all of those people ended up in the dungeon.
Nor I, Sleet spoke up. I'd venture to guess they were mages who were either there on a mission, or simply wound up at the wrong place at the wrong time.
They could have been guardians,
Kristen lamented quietly, and all of the air left the room. The thought had never even crossed my mind, but now that it was there, I couldn't ignore it.
Is that a possibility?
Nia asked my aunt.
Anything is a possibility,
Kristen replied, and she fidgeted with the sleeve of her jumpsuit.
Normally, humans don't just end up in the Shadowscape without reason. Only guardians and mages on response teams crossed into that realm. So whoever was locked away down there was likely important. Otherwise, they would have just been killed instantly. Why torture them if they didn't mean anything?
I think that's something we should explore at a later time. But until then, I think we should hear about this book,
Galahar proposed.
Griff, can you explain the contents?
Yes, I nodded, and I began to explain the history of the realms, according to the first page of the book. Once I reached the most revolutionary part, I was met with exclamatory remarks and slack-jawed faces.
Griff, please repeat what you just said,
Arwen insisted, and the professor leaned forward with a gleam in her eyes.
I know I must have heard you wrong, because I swear you just said the entity on the moon is a demon.
Yeah, you heard me correctly, I said. It's a demon, and an ancient one at that. It's been dormant for centuries, and something caused it to finally awaken.
What does it want with us?
Freya asked in a small voice. The Hawk Princess's dark blonde eyebrows were creased together in confusion, and I could tell she was struggling to understand the concept. I highly doubted the Southern clans knew much about demons,
and I wasn't looking forward to explaining them to the already cautious and somewhat superstitious warrior princess. It feeds off life, I revealed to the group. When the original mages created this new dimension to escape to, the demon and its asteroid took root into the Shadowscape, and up until recently, it had been bound there. I don't know how exactly it managed to appear in our dimension, but it's here now, and it won't stop until the worlds are merged together.
A demon, Sleet breathed as his silvery eyes expanded. The invader is a demon.
Maker, this is even worse than I imagined,
Nia whispered, and she leaned back in her chair.
Where did this book come from?
Syra wondered.
Someone had to have written it, right? Did it mention an author's name?
There was a section toward the end that somewhat answers that question, I said. Apparently, the book was written by an Arkan, one of the older ones who existed before the current nine. She called herself Philona, the sixth Arkan.
Wow,
Layla remarked with an odd expression.
That sounds ominous. Philona,
Nia repeated back.
I've never heard of her. Were the other Arkans familiar with the name?
I asked them, but none of them knew the name, I explained, and the ashen-haired elementalist's shoulders slumped.
Damn,
she cursed.
Wouldn't the goddesses be familiar with one of their own?
Grand Mage Kennefic inquired with a scrutinizing gaze. She predated them by quite a while, I said. From what I've gathered, I would say she met her end just after she penned the book.
Why would an Arkan take the time to write such a thing?
Arwen inquired, and her auburn eyebrows creased together in confusion. Well, she said she didn't share her sister's visions for violence, and questioned their desire to kill humans, I replied to the professor. She had pieced together the events of the past and uncovered the presence of the demon, and tried to warn them, but none would listen. So she wrote it down for future generations to find it. She said the world needed someone who would bring together humans and monsters, and they needed to know all of this history in order to do it.
An Arkan who wanted to help humans and monsters alike,
Gawain mused.
That's an interesting concept.
That certainly is an interesting detail,
Sleet agreed with the Fire Mage.
I'd like to know more about this Philona.
As do I,
Arwen chimed in.
Perhaps the research team and I can try to uncover information about her. Not that this part Arkan isn't interesting and all. But what do we do now?
Ashla wondered.
The demon is trying to bring the worlds together so it can devour us all. So how do we put a stop to it?
I don't know, I admitted to her. And the umberskinned ice mage looked defeated by my response.
Oh,
she tugged on one of her thick braids, and her chocolate eyes remained fixed on the table in front of her.
There isn't much we can do,
Grand Mage Kennefic explained, and his expression was grave.
All of our efforts to secure the Enclave have worked in our favor, but they've left us limited in others. We can't import supplies because of the monsters beyond the wilds, and our forces are spread too thin. Furthermore, I'm not even certain what I would ask my troops to do. How are we supposed to physically defeat an enemy that resides on the moon?
Does the book mention how the original group of mages managed to defeat the demon?
Nia asked me.
Vaguely, I replied.
It mentions the mages somehow traveled through its tentacles, but it didn't elaborate too much further.
Shit!
The multi-elementalist sighed, and her cheeks turned bright red when her father whipped his head over to her with surprise.
Sorry, father.
No apologies necessary.
The Grand Mage waved his hand in the air. Of course, I haven't had a chance to read the entire book yet, I pointed out to the group. We're operating off only a small chunk of text, and I think if I had a little longer with it, I might be able to find out the information we need.
I'd suggest we make that our top priority,
the Grand Mage declared.
At least your top priority, Griff, since you're the only one who can translate the glyphs. While we continue to monitor the Enclave and beyond, you should try to find a way for us to get to the demon.
I think that's a fine idea,
Headmaster Sleet agreed with him as he stroked his closely trimmed white beard.
Mr. Griff, would you mind?
Not at all, I said. I brought it here to be studied, and I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to get us closer to victory.
That's what I was hoping you'd say,
the renowned Storm Mage smiled at me.
Thank you for all you've already accomplished for us, Griff. The realm is once again in your debt for your discovery.
Yes, thank you, Griff,
the Grand Mage agreed.
This brings us so much closer than we were before, and I know we'll only move further on as more answers are revealed.
I appreciate the thanks, but I was only doing what was right, I insisted. I'll do my best to discover more.
In the meantime, we should probably return to the Academy,
Gallahar announced to the room.
I'm sure Griff could use some downtime, and we have some meetings with the troops to attend to.
Everyone rose from their seats, and after we said a round of goodbyes, we all went our separate ways once more. As my friends disappeared down the spiral staircase, the same feeling of dread twisted my stomach once more. My team was braver than I gave them credit for, and the mage's dedication to protecting the realm was incredible, but I was ready to help lead us to a conclusion. I would do anything in my power to defeat the demon and get life back to normal, but for my sake, and for the rest of the world's. That night, I was banished to my bedroom after dinner, and with good reason. My shoulders were slumped, and it was hard to remain awake after all of the excitement of the day. I wanted to stay awake to spend time with my family, but they'd assured me we could make up for it later. My children were all just as tired, and I knew my women could use some downtime as well, so I accepted my exile with grace. I removed my clothes and climbed underneath my comforter, but before I could drift off into sleep, I heard a soft knock on the door. A sigh rose up from my chest before I could stop it, and I pinched the bridge of my nose. I'd become accustomed to nighttime knocks on my door, and they were always either met with sexy encounters, big news, or even worse, bad news. It was always a gamble, and while two out of three of the options weren't terrible, a knot formed in my stomach at the possibility of bad news.
Hello? I called out.
Come on in! I sat up in bed and ran a hand through my hair in an attempt to seem more awake than I was. As the door creaked open, I rubbed the sleepiness from my eyes and squared my shoulders. To my delight, Arwen entered the room, and a smile appeared on my face.
Did I wake you?
The beautiful redhead asked as she took in the sight of my bare chest and the blankets wrapped around my lower half.
No, not at all, I insisted, and I patted the empty left side of the bed. What's going on?
There's something I wanted to talk to you about,
Arwen began, and she nervously rubbed her arm.
If this is a bad time...
It's never a bad time. I shook my head and patted the bed again. Come on over here.
Okay.
The healer mage smiled at me, and she gracefully crossed the room to join me on the bed. Her amber eyes were downcast, and as she ran her hands through her long red hair, I began to fear the worst. Is the baby okay? I asked her as my eyes trailed down to her subtly curved stomach.
The baby is fine, she said. According to Meriden, he or she is getting stronger by the day. And despite everything else going on, this pregnancy has been fairly easy on me.
Good. I let out a sigh of relief. I was worried you were here to deliver bad news. My mind always ventures to the worst possible places, especially as of late.
No, I promise. I'd have told you straight away if something was wrong with our child,
Arwen swore. So, what is going on? I wondered with a curious tilt of my head. The healer mage bit her lower lip and took a deep breath as she apparently tried to gather her words.
Griff, I've been thinking long and hard about the state of the world and what it means for our future,
Arwen finally began in a serious tone.
With all that's happened in the past few weeks and our little knowledge of how to defeat our enemy, it's become very clear there's a chance we won't survive this fight.
Arwen, don't say that, I started to say, but the healer mage cut me off with a firm shake of her head.
I'm not saying it because I don't believe in us,
she insisted.
I'm saying this because I want us to consider all of the possibilities from a realistic perspective. Which brings me to my proposal. Griff, I don't want to spend a single second more, just as your fiancé. If there's a chance these days will be my last, I don't want to spend them as anything else but your wife.
Are you saying what I think you're saying? I asked.
Yes,
the red-headed professor confirmed.
Griff, I want to marry you. Tonight.